But hello, radiant ones. I hope you all are on board. Just in case people are still are trying to join us, I'm going to ask, actually answer a couple of questions that already are posted here. And one question was, what, Matthias? Okay, how can we learn to be healers? Are you going to offer more classes on the phone? I would like to learn more, and I can't travel. Thank you. And this is Monica from Los Angeles. Yes, Monica, we are going to offer the classes. In fact, there are going to be two classes. One, people who can come in person, and the other one, people via conference call. So yes, the answer is yes. And Beth from Naperville, is it possible in your experience to cleanse another chakras? Yes. And or to energize them to become more fully functioning, healthier? Yes, absolutely. It's possible. Okay, so today is May 12th, Saturday, May 12th, and I'm kind of buying time here in case people are still trying to log in. This gathering is done via the internet and as well as the phone. And also, if they have a question, I think if you have a question, you could press star two, and your question appears. And you can type your questions if you're using the computers. Any more questions so far? So Sarah from Santiago. Dear Master Donald, greeting from Chile. Thank you very much for offering this. Please, here is my question. During your interview, Anatomy of Thought, in the Sheila Gale show, you talked about clearing our thoughts. If I understood right, are you going to teach us that today? Well, it's a two-hour, you know, that's the first question, I guess, or second question. It's a two-hour gathering here, so I'll do as much as I can. I definitely intend Sarah to attend to thoughts as much as I can. It's a huge subject. It's a very interesting subject, and I'll do as much as I can with thoughts, because you can't possibly be a healer, a good healer, if you're not in charge of your thoughts. So that's a definite yes, but I don't know how long we have to do that. I'm sure we're going to touch base with it. Have you been doing your guided meditation journey to your sacred heart to some time now? I'm not sure I understand the question. So I wasn't able to visualize neither the white beam of light or the vortex in the heart. Is there anything you recommend to improve my ability to visualize? With much gratitude, Sarah. Well, Sarah, practice. A lot of times when we think, we actually are imagining. I think what is probably lacking in your case is that you want to see with the eyes of your eyes. We can also see with the eyes of the heart. Sometimes we call that feeling. So you may feel it's happening, or you may just intend. Just because you're intending, the universe actually provides you with what you need. Like, for example, in a lot of my meditations, I talk about the frequencies of perfection in this physical universe of ours, and that is 7.83 hertz. Now, people may not know what hertz means, or they have no gauge to know what is 7.83 hertz. But just because we are talking about it at this very moment, it appears. It's in our consciousness, is accessible to us. All right, I guess I'm going to start. It's been 5 minutes, and the title of our today gathering is Positioning. Technically, then, in addressing the title Positioning, which may be applied in healing, may be applied in your finances, may be applied in your relationships, then we address different things. However, you know, for you to have a reasonably clear understanding of you know what I do, you must get into my head, and I let you. So life shapes around where you position you to be. It is all about positioning. Wherever you position you breathe the frequencies of the field or the plane of reality that you live in. Excuse my voice. So if you are in a room that you are in, wherever you are breathing the frequencies of the room. Nothing more, nothing less. Anything else is just imagery. Therefore, a lot of times, you know, if you know where you are in life, you just see the condition as is, and you're going to free yourself from the idea of justice. And of course, we get into that. Today we are going to talk about some of the axioms, and I'm going to basically give you a few definitions or glossaries for what we are going to do. But let's all join and merge and have something in common, all of us together. And for us to do this, I would like us to breathe together. So if you can, if your hands are free, I want both hands on the sides of your head, please. Inhaling slowly, expand the chest, the diaphragm, giving your precious hearts more room. So, hands on the sides of your head, breathing very slowly. And stretch the time of inhalation, please. Stretch the time of inhalation. And as you inhale, I want you to raise the muscles of the abdomen, please. Raise the muscles of the abdomen. As you inhale, it's like you're pulling in the warmth of your hands inside your head. So inhaling slowly and pull in the warmth of your hand, as well as any other healing frequencies accessible to you, inside your head, and allow the healing frequencies to come and join and merge right in the middle. The deeper you breathe in and the more you stretch the time of inhalation, the more balance. So let's do that together, please, slowly. It's like you're inviting the healing frequencies from both sides of your head. The flow from the right and the left are going to join and merge right inside your head. And after a few breaths, we are going to have a vortex. Whether you feel it, you see it, that's what is going to happen. A vortex that rotates from the right side of your head towards the back, towards the left, towards the front, but inside your head. I'd like us to all agree that that is what is going to happen. So inhaling slowly through both hands, which basically means you're pulling in what is coming through your own hands and the healing frequencies that you're immersed, soaking in it, inside your head. Then I want you, please, to touch your earlobes. If you're holding the phone, then maybe with one hand. If you're not holding the phone, maybe with both hands. Just touch your earlobes and apply pressure. See if there is any discomfort. Can they hear me through this? Is there any way to Inhaling slowly, and if you have any tenderness in your earlobes, it means there are probably maybe minor stuck energies in your head. Ears are they are wonderful hologram of the entire body, and the earlobes represent the head, and the top of your ears represent probably your feet area. So wherever you touch on your ears, it's like you're sending signals or you're inquiring to see if there are stuck energies there. And if they are, just hold on to that tenderness in any part of your ear and inhale. And as you inhale, it's like you're pulling the tenderness out of your ear wherever you touch. For now, we are focusing mainly on the earlobes. Then please touch the areas around the nose, around the eyes. See if there are any tendernesses. Close your eyes and roll your eyes. Exaggerate. Make huge circles with your eyes. And any area, if you have tenderness, I would like you to make a mental note and maybe touch the area and inhale. So you basically touch the area that is tender and inhale. The intent, or niyat is intent plus the element of the sacred, is for you to pull out the stuck energy out of the area that there is tenderness. So any area there are tendernesses anywhere, there must be stuck energies. Touch your chin, touch your throat on either side. Touch your shoulders. Touch the area under the clavicle bones on the left and the right side. Any tenderness, you just stay there and inhale. It's like you're pulling the energies out. So you're using your fingers and hands like a vacuum to suck out and away from you the stuck energies that may be there. Touch your chest, tap on your sternum please. Tap on your sternum and probably a little bit more stronger than usual. I want more than a gentle tapping on your sternum to activate your thymus gland. Put your hand or a hand on the chest, on the heart. Address the heart. I call the major organs major collective consciousnesses. So heart is a wonderful major she collective consciousness. And of course she has a lot to talk about. So gently tap, tap and say, "Hello, radiant one," addressing the heart. "Hello, dear one. How you doing?" You see, heart is a wonderful major she collective consciousness, and she has her own very independent central nervous system. Totally independent of the brain. So tap gently and ask her to slow down. She has had two major predispositions, love and hurt. Love and hurt. We want it to be all healing, light and love. As you bring your attention to the space under your left breast and tap. That's your spleen. Tap reasonably firmly on the spleen. So we tapped on the thymus gland, we tapped on the spleen. It's like we are activating these wonderful major collective consciousnesses inside you. Feel your gut, feel the area, apply some pressure around the ribs and the rib cages. I want you to locate your navel, please. Locate your navel. knowing that the cells in and around your navel are exact same cells as the cells in your brain, with one difference. The cells in the navel have not evolved to self-doubt, but they can be extremely accurate. They can be extremely accurate with an F. If we let go of the stuck energies in the abdominal area between the navel and the pubic bone, the area is full of fear and fright and their agents. Who are the agents? Concerns. So technically any concern at all, is an agent of fear. Finding the navel, then go down probably around 3.5 inches below your navel. That's probably like 7-8 centimeters for those of you living overseas. There is a point that is very famous with its Japanese name, and that's how we use it. It is called the Hara point, that's H-A-R-A. And from the Hara point, you are connected to the womb of the universe, to the core of the matrix of life and light, to the center of knowingness. The connection is non-verbal, non-denominational, is free from karmic and cosmic consequences, ancestral and ethnic influences, is your only physical highway to heavens that can be seen. So just think it. Just think it. There is a cord that looks like an umbilical cord, is made of light, silver, white. Light is physical. So there indeed is a physical connection between you and love source. As I said, non-verbal. You don't have to utter 10,000 sacred words, mantras, zikr, to connect. You're connected already. Non-denominational. No school of mind, no religion, no prophet can claim that because of them you are connected to love source. You are connected 24/7. When for those of you who haven't known about the cord of connection, today is the day for the first time you are maintaining a conscious physical connection to the core of the matrix of life and light. A conscious physical connection. Running this physical body is always wonderful to actually feel a physical connection between you and your maker. The cord of connection has been seen since a few thousands of years ago. The best time to observe the cord is in the evenings or at nights. At nights, accomplished clairvoyance can tell how many people are in a building by the number of the silver-white cords that go up through the roof. If the cords are entangled, it means people are intimate. And if the cords are rooms apart, then people are in different rooms and they can be located. Anyways, the inflows of healing units, please make a mental note, the inflows of healing units fresh from the oven of creation, tailor-made, special edition, just for you, come through the cord, enter from the heart point inside you and not through your head. In your head, you process this holy healing information. These healing frequencies have been waiting for eons, eons, to be a part of your healing processes. And believe you me, it's time. It's time. So inhale and raise the muscles of the abdomen. I'd like very much for you all to adopt this kind of breathing, please, at all times. It's one of the first steps for you to be a powerful healer, or to be a healer. Inhale and raise the muscles of the abdomen, maintaining the integrity of your only physical connection to love source that can be seen. V-chord of connection is the second most important aspect of your life. First, of course, is your breath and breathing. So you make sure you inhale and expand the chest and give your precious heart more room. Raise the muscles of the abdomen to make sure you are maintaining the integrity of your physical connection, the second most important aspect of your life to Love Source. The cord of connection, the silver-white cord, is the second most important aspect of your life. Why? Because if the cord gets cut, it gets severed more than 9 minutes, one dies. So right now we really are attending to number one and number two of most important aspect of your life. Think of your cord of connection, the color is silver, white. As you bring your attention to your pubic bone, locate your pubic bone and press on the pubic bone, please. For those of you that have your two hands free, you may place your fingers on the pubic bone and with the other hand tap on the knuckles. Tap on the knuckles. A very important area, of course. But especially on that area, there are three minor chakras. Three wonderful minor chakras. So we are kind of activating, rejuvenating, replenishing you, your physical body. So you can be fully present in our session today and in life in general. Activating all these centers of energies that have been almost totally useless. It's like we are cranking them back to life. Inhaling, please, slowly. Feeling your thighs, so actually touch the muscles of your thighs. If you want, dig in with your fingers. Any tenderness? We do what we did with our earlobes and the head. Any tenderness? You put your fingers or hand there and inhale very deeply. Stretching the time of inhalation is like... It's like we are using our hands and fingers as a vacuum to pull out the stuck energies. Feeling the thighs. Move down towards your knees. Touch your knees if you can. Apply pressure around the knees. Any tenderness? The same story. Wait. Put your fingers on and around the area and inhale, and it's like you're vacuuming the stuck energies through your fingertips. And as you exhale, let them all out. Touch your hips, please. Feel your hips. If you can reach the sacrum, the back area, that would be nice. Touch your sacrum. Touch the soft tissues in the small of the back, on and around the sacrum, the iliac area. Any tenderness? The same story. Just touch and see if there are tendernesses around the S-bones, around the tailbones, buttocks. Take your time. Inhaling slowly, stretching the time of inhalation, and pull out the stuck energies again through your fingertips. And once you pull out, slightly take your fingers away from your body and guide the stuck energies that you pulled in out and away from you. It's like you are exhaling and projecting through your fingertips. For those of you who can touch your shins, the bone under the knees, please do so. Pay attention to the muscles on the size of the shins. Any tenderness? There usually is some sign of emotional and physical tiredness and sometimes exhaustion. The more the tenderness or even pain, the more exhaustion. So just because you're touching and feeling and inhaling, you pull away the stuck energy is there using your hands and fingers. For those of you who can reach your ankles, please do so. Your feet, do so. The bottom of the feet, in the middle of the arch of each foot, there is a wonderful center of energy, a minor chakra. Then make yourself comfortable, please. Just rest and start inhaling as deeply, as rhythmically as possible. Inhaling slowly and one off as you're inhaling, I'm going to share with you one of my axioms. It's called the axiom number 27. It's called the axiom of the first agreement. Rest and relax, please. Make yourself very comfortable. Notice if there are any areas of tenderness anywhere. Just release, just relax, just be. You don't have to hold on to anything. Those of you that can effortlessly leave a hand on the chest, on the heart, please do so. So technically, an axiom means generally accepted truth, a statement or idea that people accept as self-evidently true. Although it may be unproven, it's used to prove other propositions in any system. In Shafa, we have quite a few axioms. And the axiom of first agreement is one of the most important, if not the most important axiom. Inhale slowly and just imagine is the beginning of time. All the intelligences that have ever existed, together combined, yours and mine, and everyone you have ever known, all the people that you have ever seen, maybe on the highway, going the opposite directions, the people, the intelligences, rather, that you have not seen, and you're not going to see. At one point, we are postulating this is true now. At one point, we all, and when I say we, I'm talking about the intelligences that run us. We all agreed not to know everything. We all collectively agreed not to know everything. We were in a position, in a plane of reality we call knowingness. We knew everything there was to know. And it's like, why move? Why move? Technically, we could say life was boring. We all collectively agreed to stop knowing everything, and that agreement gave us a weight, a physical weight. Each agreement, you see, has a weight. The weight helped us to descend. We all descended from knowing to being.
from knowing into being.
Once we descended into the plane of reality we call being, then it's impossible to know everything. The agreement was to stop knowing everything so we can descend and start being very, very creative, meta-realizing, manifesting. The idea was to meta-realize and have fun. The idea was to meta-realize and have fun. Once we descended into the plane of reality we call beingness, then we could know anything, but not everything. For you to know anything you want to know, you reach out to the plane of reality we call knowing, and the information is going to be downloaded. It may take a few breaths, if you are in the here and now, conscious of your breath and breathing, conscious of your only physical highway to heaven, it may actually download pretty fast through your holy broadband, through the cord of connection. The holy healing information actually keeps on coming 24/7. So anything you want to know, you just reach out to the plane of reality we call knowing, and the information is going to be downloaded and you start to know. Sometimes it's actually, to other people, pretty strange. They ask a question, I connect, and I give them the answer. In the past, they would ask, how do you know? And to tell you the truth, I have to lie. I would say, I read it someplace. Or somebody told me. I want you to start believing that you can actually download any information that you want. Remember, it's impossible while operating this physical body of yours. The only temples you have leased for a lifetime, while you're operating this, it's impossible to know everything. But it's more than possibility to know anything you want to know. But you must position yourself, you see. You must position yourself. Once you descend into being, based on our first agreement, then you start to do things. Then you start to have things. And once you start to have anything, you want to have more. It's the basic human psychology. It's the basic human psychology. Once you have anything, you want to have more. So if you have money, you want to have more money. If you have love, you want to have more love. Strangely enough, if you have pain, you want more pain. Trying to realize and analyze and understand, why do you have the pain? Basically, anything you have, you want to have more. So is the beginning of time. We made one single agreement, the most important agreement in our lifetimes. Incarnation after incarnations, lifetime after lifetime, that is the most important agreement. So, we descended, and it's like a baby, like an infant, that is totally aware, is your first birth, is your first incarnation. Inhaling slowly, make sure you maintain the integrity of the flow that is coming through the silver-white cord inside you, so we can all connect, so we can all know what truth is. So it's the beginning of time, and you can actually see the cord of connection. You can see exactly where you are connected. You can see your only physical highway to where you were. Pre
your first dissension. You're looking, and it's like, what is that? Oh, these are the eyes. What are the eyes? Well, the tiny holes through which you see the universe that you decided to come into, you can see through. Funny. Through these tiny holes, we are going to see the universe? What an impossible task, but very interesting. What's that? What's what? Oh, that's breathing. What's breathing? Oh, from now on, you need air to breathe. Through these tiny holes, we call the nostrils. From now on, we have to breathe. And through the mouth. What's that? That's the mouth. What is in it? That's the taste. That's the tongue. How funny. You mean from now on, I have to taste things to know how they taste? Yes, that's the agreement, you see. We descended, agreeing not to know everything. So we have to go through the experience. Inhaling slowly, totally conscious and connected. Not Christian or Muslim. Not Hindu, Buddhist, Sufi or Zen. Not any religion or cultural system. You see, it's the beginning of time. I am not, you say, from the East or the West. Not out of the ocean or up from the ground. Not natural or eternal. Not composed of elements at all. I'm not an entity in this world or the next. Did not descend from Adam or Eve or any origin story. My place is the placeless, a trace of the traceless. Belong to the beloved. Have seen the two worlds as one, and that one call to and know. First, last, outer, inner, only that breath breathing, human being. Inhale slowly, raise the muscles of the abdomen. I strongly recommend that you breathe this way all the time during your session today, while you eat, when you drink, when you talk, when you walk, and especially when you go to sleep. As your pillow to remind you of this kind of breathing. Inhale slowly and let's talk. Move your toes and fingers, stretch if you want to. I'm going to give you a few breaths to pull yourself together, please. I remind you of the title of our today's gathering or meditation. Positioning. So technically, again, life shapes around where you position yourself to be. It is all about positioning. Wherever you position you, you breathe the frequencies of the field or the plane of reality you live in. You live it, you behave it. Nothing more, nothing less. I've been told by quite a few people that I cannot teach what I do. And I think that probably I can provide a healing environment for just about everyone to realize their choices as partners of creation, as co-creators and creators. The people who have been telling me and the people who firmly believe in this, that I cannot teach what I do, are usually, I categorize them in just one category, regardless of the gender, the age, ethnicity, their belief system. These are the ones that actually experienced mostly hands-on healing session with me. Like for example, as I'm healing and the people are receiving the healing frequencies, they may experience many hands on them. It's like quite a few people are putting their hands on them. Some people may experience one of my fingers being extremely cold on them, and the other hand is pretty warm or maybe hot next to the cold finger. Some people may just notice that the sheets on the table that they're lying down is moving, and there is no air, there is no draft. So for them it's almost an impossibility to teach that, and it's like, hands, there is an explanation for it. I have many hands of light, so I have two physical hands and many hands of light, so I place them in different areas and work on different areas all at the same time. There also may be hands of the individuals, invisible helpers or mine, that come and help. So these conditions actually may happen in just about any healing frequencies, providing the person, the healer, is actually in touch with divinity, with love source, experiencing at one moment, then all these may happen. So there is no need to teach them. These things happen. So I beg the difference. I can teach what I am doing and I can do. I've been at it for the past 6 years. I started to teach since 2007. The first example of positioning was what I just said. In fact, you know, when I position myself to be a healer, then the universe starts to help out. My mentor who passed, Master Faraday, in 1997, is present in almost all of my healing sessions. I don't ask for his help. Sometimes I do. But he just appears. He just appears and helps. As well as a host of other helpers that come and help. I just position myself to be in the healing room. I become one with the one. I just start to pull in, dispatch, pray, and then things start to happen. Healing starts to happen. Healing is a given. As far as training, I've been saying this in almost all my seminars, in all my classes, that in less than a week I can train a monkey or a chimpanzee. In less than a week. And I issue the challenge. I always say that I give $10,000 to whomever that provides me with a chimpanzee and takes care of the chimpanzee while I'm not training the chimpanzee. And if in less than a week the chimpanzee is not able to heal, here you are. I give you $10,000 and I'm good for it. And the reason why for it is that, of course, monkey see, monkey do. The monkey does not question me. The monkey does not challenge me. The monkey has certain needs, so we meet those needs, and then we just go at it, we just go at the healing. The monkey, the chimpanzee, does not judge me. If I'm bald, if I shave, if I'm Muslim, if I'm tall, if I'm short, if I have an accent, the monkey simply doesn't judge. So with all due respect though, for all the mentors and gurus, monkeys are probably a good example of being non-judgmental. In being non-judgmental, you actually start to achieve the zenith of your abilities. As soon as judgment comes, you put a cap on it. A very important lesson. A very important lesson. Before I continue, I would like to mention a few testimonials that to me are the most powerful testimonials I have ever received. These are not people who have written or have audio or video testimonials telling me that, for example, in the first session their cancer is gone. This is different. Like somebody told me recently, and this is an occurring testimonial. People kind of mention it on pass, like, I'm glad I can dream again. I'm glad I can dream again. It's been 40 years. Can you imagine not having any dreams? Unfortunately, a lot of people are like that. They cannot even dream. One other person says, my disease went just like a smell. Well, it's not, you know, these people are not calling what we've done together a miracle, or they're not giving me, you know, stately titles and so forth. They're just saying what happened, and to me this is really so very important. A person going on in life with no dreams, what a tough life. I'm so happy I was wrong, one person said, and again, these are occurring testimonials. I'm so happy I was wrong, thinking my father raped me. Thank you, thank you. I was doing Shafa too with this individual. In the first two testimonials, I did a combination. The person who said my disease went just like a smell, I was doing Shafa and Shafa too, or basically a hybrid. The person who said, I am glad I can dream again, I did just Shafa. And Shafa, by the way, means miraculous healing. In my native language, in Farsi, it means miraculous healing. One other person says, after our session, my mom and my sister are calling me. I have not had any contact with my sister for the past 6 years. And of course, similar testimonials have been given to us on a daily basis, doing either Shafa or Shafa 2. One person says, as you said, it rained everywhere, but where we held the wedding ceremony for my daughter. So there was a wedding ceremony, and I postulated that the area of the wedding, the mom was very worried that the wedding is going to be a wet wedding. And I said, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to postulate that it rains everywhere but the place of the wedding. And that's exactly what happened. And it can be done. So she says, as you said, it rained everywhere but where we held the wedding ceremony for my daughter. It was as if we were in a circle wide enough for the wedding. Amazing. Thank you. I saw it, but I still can't believe it, a person says. The fire actually turned away from my home. I saw you focusing and moving your hands around and about, and the fire was diverted, but I do not know what to make of it all. One person says, I did not notice that I have stopped smoking for 2 days already. I hope my cancer is gone too. One person says, I came to you to heal my cancer, and I did not tell you that I was colorblind. I said I was. Thank you for making my words colorful. It is so beautiful, and I'm so grateful. I can see clearly now that my cancer is going to heal. A lot of people with passion tell me these things. Finally, I can hear you now. Please help me to get my, whatever the condition is, out of me. I'm going to stop challenging you. So people actually do realize that they challenge me, and of course they make the process of healing last longer than it should. Some of the any questions, and I'm talking to our technical person Matthias here. If there is no question, I'm going to. There is one. Okay. Well, Matthias is looking to see if there are any questions. I'm going to mention a few words that I constantly use, very commonly use. One was the word axiom, which basically means generally accepted truth. A statement or idea that people accept as self-evidently true. I talk about cure. There is a difference between cure and healing. Cure is temporary relief. The disease may come back at some point in time. Like the level of pain is 10 and I reduce it to nothing, but the pain comes. That was a cure. Healing is when the pain does not come back. So there is a permanent presence of harmony in previously diseased area. I talk about honestly very often, which basically means seeing the conditions as they are and not as we want them to see. So very often in our classes, you know, I tell my students, you're not honest, which they know what I mean. They no longer get upset when I said you're not honest, which means they are not seeing the condition as is. They are seeing the condition as they want the condition to be. And if that's the case, no healing is going to manifest. If there is a cancerous tumor someplace and you know, we totally ignore it and just say love, 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 you know, harmony, harmony. If we ignore, we are in denial, then there is nothing to heal. We talk about miracles, which basically simply means unexpected healing or healing which was not really expected. Cure of life. Okay. One other perceptions. I talk about perception, which basically means a single unified awareness that we derive towards us. When there is a stimulus. So when the perceptions come one after the other, then we have a sensation that we can anchor to and we can basically attend to. I talk about postulate. Postulate means to assume or assert the truth. To assume as a premise or axiom. Take things for granted, basically, because we know it's true. It's like, you know, I know the sun is going to shine. You know, I don't have to talk about it. I just know the sun is going to shine. So you may hear some noise and people talking in the background. We are trying to allow people to raise questions if they have any. And it seems like there are no questions at this point. I talk very often, I use the word reds, which is really, which means repetition, R for repetition, E for enthusiasm, D for discipline. So we constantly mention that. Without it, basically, regardless of how good you are in any endeavor, if you stop practicing over and over, you're not going to reach the zenith of your abilities. So we say reds in that. Refined person, we do not in Shafa use enlightenment. We use refinement. So a refined person is one who can be free from one's conscious, be conscious and be free from one's subconscious as much as humanly possible. So there are moments that a refined person is not refined, is not, you know, for as long as you operate this physical body, there is no enlightenment. Enlightenment in shofar is when one leaves the body. So I talk about resentment, and resentment is a non-conducive field. Basically, when I say there is resentment, you know, if I'm talking to you and I say there is resentment, what I mean is that there is a non-conducive field, and nothing goes through the field. You're not necessarily resenting me, but nothing goes between us. No energy is fluent between the two of us. I talk about soul. There is a difference between soul and spirit. Soul is a spirit plus experience. Soul is spirit plus experience. So technically, when the spirit starts to have experiences, then we call it soul. And basically, what is running you is a soul and not a spirit. Once we cross, once we leave our physical body, then going through different processes of cleansing, then we reach the level of spirit again. I want to talk about the one of my very important axioms. It's called the axiom 57, and in that I say whatever you try to change persists. Again, whatever you try to change persists. Change your life and your life persists. Your life has been persisting because you have been changing from infancy to now. However, if you want to change a condition, let's say a cancerous tumor, unfortunately, the process is going to continue. The process is going to last more and more and more. So what do we do? What do we do? What do we do is that we actually see the condition as is, or what are we healing? We see a cancerous tumor as it is, but we stop trying to fix it. Because if we try to fix it, the condition persists. So what do? We create a condition opposite, totally an opposite reality to what is. So if you look at your both hands, if the palm of one hand is down, that's the condition. Then the condition that you are going to create opposite to that is the palm of the hand facing upwards. And then we keep on looking at the new condition, make it tangible, then we bring in the new condition, superimpose it on the old condition, we keep on looking at the new condition, superimpose on the old condition, and healing is a given. Technically, the universe is not designed really for death and destruction. All the chaos that we observe is not really a chaos, it's just an order we don't understand. Okay, there seem to be no question. As I said, I'm going to let you in my head. So the title again is Positioning. I remember coming out of the hospital and going through the process. For those of you that don't know, I had leukemia. Technically, everybody thought that I'm going to die, and my wife decided to take me back to Iran, and so I could at least visit my family members and my father, who was alive then. And I said fine, and we went there. And technically, I positioned myself to go to Iran and meet my mentor. When I met my mentor for the first time, which was almost a day before my departure, coming back to America, I discovered that all these years I've been thinking that there is something wrong with my eyes, and there's nothing wrong with my eyes. In fact, I was a clairvoyant, but I didn't know. I had no clue. So by seeing him, I positioned myself to discover
that ability in me that I'm sure it got enhanced because of his presence. Another example of positioning. Many years ago, I was sitting in my small two-bedroom apartment, and I was contemplating. It was a Sunday, and I was supposed to go on a radio show. I was supposed to diagnose and then do the healing. So it was about, I'm sure, about 10:30, because I looked at the time. The apartment that I was living was in Corte Madera, a place probably about 15, 16 miles away from where I live now. And it was a very light apartment. We had floor-to-ceiling sliding doors, sunny day. And I was contemplating what to do, what to say during the basically my first radio show. And so as I'm sitting and contemplating, all of a sudden a huge burst of light enters inside the room. A huge burst of light enters inside the room. The light comes and it's so magnificent and huge that I thought there is something wrong with my eyes or something is happening. So it took me a few breaths to adjust to find out that there actually is this concentration of light, but it's a sunny day and the sun is shining and so on and so forth, and all of a sudden the huge concentration of light turns into a angelic form with two huge wings. And as I'm looking in awe with my jaws dropped, the two wings also turned into a human shape. The main figure was so huge, and I knew I'm observing an archangel, that it was bending. It was bending, and the wings that turned into angels, they were like 8 feet tall. They were from floor to ceiling. And the archangel, and I know it was an archangel, first of all, I could see details. I could see the details in the face. I could see the feet. I could see the hands and everything. And that's how I knew it's an archangel. Basically told me not to go to the radio show. And instead start working with terminally ill patients. And so I'm not sure really with what language we did speak, but of course there was no choice for me there, and I gladly accepted the what I was told. And I immediately called the radio station. It was a Sunday. And I canceled my radio show for the next day. And the next day I started to basically call all the hospices. I called the Hospice of Marin, where I live. I called the Laguna Niguel Hospice in San Francisco. I just was looking and searching and calling people if they know of a hospice. And I would call the hospice and I say, I have a call. I really would like, I'm a healer. I really want to work with your patients. I don't want any money. I won't touch your patients. I'll be at the corner, quiet. I'm not expecting any recognition. Will you please allow me to come and work in the hospice? And, people who responded were really very gracious. They were very friendly, and they said, yes, we're going to ask the manager to call you. And no call came through. That's the Monday. Somehow on Monday, I had the I was urged to go downstairs to my storage room, and I cleaned up the storage room, and I just did things. I just went ahead and did things, not really thinking, why is it that I'm cleaning the storage area? Why is it that what prompted me to go there? I had no question. I just did things. So I went downstairs. There was a storage area, I cleaned it up, I put two chairs there. And I went upstairs. And I still am not questioning, why am I doing this? On Thursday, I'm sitting and contemplating early in the morning, and all of a sudden I felt like I totally can empty my head of all the preconceived notions, of everything that I thought was wrong or right and just be. It's like there was a drawer inside my head full of paper clips, rubber bands, stuff that is in the drawer, you never use them, but they're there, creating clutter. I just emptied my head, and it was such a freedom, unbelievable freedom. And as soon as I did that, there is a ring. The door rings. And I opened the door, and there is a lady in her 70s, out of breath. She climbed two stairs up, and she said that, you know, her partner doesn't have much. They have given her a few days, and if I could please go downstairs or go to their place of residence and heal. And I said I can't go to anybody's place of residence because it takes like half a day and I miss other patients. So I went downstairs. Her partner was sitting at the next to the driver's seat. I sat on the back side, on the back seat. There were tumors all over, on the neck, on the head, on the shoulder was really a humongous grapefruit size tumor. And I started to work. I sat on the chair. I started to work. And all tumors that were visible either shrunk or disappeared. And they left. So I come upstairs, and before I get a chance to have a glass of water, all of a sudden there is a knock at the door. This time there is nobody rings the bell. There is a knock at the door. And there is another person that says, you know, my partner has been given a few days and she cannot climb the stairs. Will you come to our place and work with my partner? Identical stories. And I said, I'm sorry, no, but if she can't she walk, you know, a few steps? She says, yes. So I take her to the storage area. And I worked in the storage area with this person. The same stories. The same story as the first one. All tumors shrunk or disappeared, at least the ones that were visible to the naked eye. The story continued. Throughout the day, people started to come. I guess in some level I did not understand lesbians and gays, and I really didn't have anything against them, but I didn't understand the process. And it happened that three of these couples that came, they were all lesbians. All these people that came, they were also from other ethnicities, and I think probably 80% of them were Jewish. I was tested to see, you know, if there is any hint of any preconceived notions in any one of these areas. And the story continued, and one thing that was very interesting was that all of these people knew about the healing that some time ago I did with a horse. So either they witnessed it, or their partners witnessed the healing, or they heard from a friend about the horse. Somebody called me a few months prior and said that she has a horse and she's taken the horse to University of Davis. They've done some work. They removed some of the tumor, but they said that is inoperable. The tumor in the horse's forehead is inoperable. And she was begging and pleading with me to go to the
wrench and work on the horse. And I said, well, let me think about it, because I'm not sure really if I should do that. And plus the fact that, you know, I have to drive. I try not to drive because it takes away the concentration. And going back and forth, let me think about it. I'll call you back. I hung up, and as soon as I hung up, I said, why not? Why not? Let's do that. So I did it. I went to the ranch. If my memory serves me, it was called Wood Acre. And, you know, I went and I saw the horse. It was one of those giant horses. I think the name is Thoroughbred. And the horse was looking at me like, don't you come close. And the white of the eyes was very apparent. And the owner was hanging onto the rein in case the horse misbehaves. The horse didn't trust anybody after, you know, going to University of Davis and going to the surgeries and so on and so forth. So I started to work, and eventually I went close and I held the rein and I started to work on her. And in a few minutes, the horse's head dropped, and the eyelashes, beautiful eyelashes, were going up and down. And he started to nibble on my sleeve. And quite embarrassingly, you know, he started to have an erection. And I was told that is a good thing. It's a sign of healing by the owner. And later on, the owner said that as she held on to the... rein, holding on to the horse, her sinus actually healed as well. So, again, these are examples of positioning. You know, I position myself to go, you know, first of all, to be a healer. After I position myself to be a healer, then there is that encounter with the entity that I talked about, the huge entity that told me to work with terminally ill patients. You know, I positioned myself to go to the ranch and work with the horse. And that's how those people knew about me. So I technically, again, positioned myself, and then, you know, what I was told to do, and I love to do, actually happened. All because I positioned myself to do so. It was a few months prior, if I'm not mistaken, to the encounter with the huge entity, with the archangel. My wife and I were gifted a 3-day vacation to Cabo San Lucas in Mexico. And we went there, and she decided to lie down, and I decided to go very close to the beach. And as I went close to the beach, I noticed the waves are really fierce, and they are really tall. You know, it's like 20, 30 feet tall. So, quite an awesome view. So I stepped back, I think probably like 10 feet or more, and I dug my heel. I love the pounding of the waves against my body, so I just dug my heel and waited for the waves to come, you know, secured myself. And a wave comes, and, you know, strangely enough, they weren't waves upon waves. It was just a humongous wave would come and then crash against the shore and would rush into the shore and go probably 50, 60 feet. And the wave came, and before I was able to get away, because it was too late, the wave was huge. It just took me off my feet, treated me like a piece of wood, 2x6, humiliated me, you know, banged me here and there. I had sand in my mouth, I had sand in my beard, in my bathing suit. I was holding on to my bathing suit, and really demolished my pride. And I tried to get up. I had this horrendous pain in my left knee. I managed to get up. I think the only thing that really helped me to get up was my ego. And I turned my back towards the
Paris, so maybe she hasn't seen that, and of course she saw it, and she got up, she started to come close to me, but she kept her distance, seeing what the waves have done to me. And she says, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Of course I'm all right." And here I am, you know, all bruised, there are scratches, and they burn terribly, and I'm standing there demoralized with a lot of pain. And as you know, I said, "I'm all right." I noticed a Chinese couple that came from the left side, and I tried to make an eye contact and warn them, to get away. And they were the father was holding on to an infant, and they were really happy. And before I got a chance to, you know, say something or do something, another wave came. And this is so emotional for me. I try to contain my emotions. So another humongous wave came, again demoralized everyone, and took the baby away. It just came, removed the baby, and it just went back. And there was such a vacuum, the size of a football stadium. And the magnetic field, it was like pulling everyone towards the wave that was vacating, and the baby was gone. You know, I had a position as a healer. There was nothing I could do. I couldn't even swim or go towards the wave. You know, I would be another victim. The Chinese couple actually died on the spot, standing. Lips were shaking. They had no color. It was just white. They couldn't cry, they couldn't make a sound, they were just shaking, drooling, and they were almost dead, standing, in awe, not knowing what happened, as the next wave comes. Again, demoralizes everyone, throws them on the ground, throws me on the ground. I got up, and when the wave went back again, I had something in my arms. It was the biggest gift of my life. The baby was in my arms. So I gave the baby to the Chinese couple. Right away, colors came to their faces. They were thanking me in Chinese. They were walking backwards. I don't know how long, but they kept on walking backwards and bending and paying respect and going backward and paying respect and saying things in Chinese, going backward. And it was really clear to me what happened. For the rest of the vacation, so-called vacation, it was funny, you know. The waves would bring in these exotic fish to the shore, and Patty would take him and would bring it to me, and I would take the fish to the sea. It was clear to she and I, even though we did not speak. In fact, the entire trip was kind of, we did not utter more than a few words to each other. She kept on reading Rumi or taking some fish and handing the fish to me, and I would take the fish to the ocean. It was clear to me that for the rest of my life, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be instrumental in helping and healing others. And Patty is going to be there to help me or be instrumental to guide people towards, direct them towards me. So it was an amazing experience. I received the biggest gift of my life there. But then again, I positioned myself there. Right there, I dug my heels in the sand. I stood there, regardless of how demoralized I was, how humiliated I became. But it was like I was told to, you know, stand your ground, dig your heels, wait here, regardless of the consequences and the pain.
Okay, I'm going to give you a few seconds in case there is any questions.
One person asks, is this being recorded? And it is.
And one person is asking if the conversation, what we are doing together, what I'm saying is recorded, and the answer is yes. Okay, I know I have more examples of positionings, but you, really, as I'm talking about all these things, it just shows you, my mentality, the way I think, the way I work. Because unless you don't get into my head, you can't do what I do or better than what I do. So as I'm explaining these things, as I'm sharing my very important memories and happenings, you also get to know me in more intimate level in case we decide to study together. I think probably the... I'm done talking about my personal experiences and positionings, and I would like to mention a few things. There are questions from Leah, I think, if I'm pronouncing Monica. Monica is asking if we offer a class over the phone. Well, that's an old question. Thanks. I answered that question. Yes. The answer is yes. Okay. All right. If no questions, I would like to move towards some of the axioms that we share as mentor and as student in Shafa. They appear very often in our teachings. And basically, you're going to know if you want to study with me, and once you make that decision, then I'm going to have to see if I can invite you, if timing is right for us to study together. Again, I'm going to give a few seconds in case there are any questions. There seem to be no questions. Some time ago, probably after I met with my mentor, Master Parmenide, I was meeting with my so-called invisible helpers. I was sitting and meditating, and usually the way I sit and contemplate is I place my left fingers on the forehead and the third eye area, and the right hand goes on the chest. And sometimes, I move the hands in front of me. I drop the hands, the back of my hands in front of me, and I kind of stretch my arms like heart shape and extend my arms, and information comes. Pertinent to the subject that I'm contemplating. And in one of those very deep contemplations, I came to know, and then I visited two more Earths. So technically, what I'm saying is not really significant at this point, but it may be as we move along on our healing path, teaching and studying together, you'll see that everything will come together. So I was told first that there are three Earths at this moment, and there are two of me in two other Earths, and there are two of Matthias, the young technical man sitting next to me, and so on, and there are two of you in two other Earths. And then I actually got a chance to time travel and visit. And
So basically that turned out to be one of the things that we noticed. In fact, it kind of gave some kind of a meaning to the expression self and higher self, you know, me, myself and higher self. It's like, maybe true, but at the same time there are two of me that we are in constant communication. They are doing almost, not exactly, the same thing as we are doing at this very moment, with some variations, with some changes. That is a that's the information that I got. You know, we have two more of us in different, say, quadrants of the universe, and we are in constant communication. Sometimes, you know, slightly differently, we are looking at the same things or similar things. I'm told that we are in tier one, in the process of creation. There was a tier zero. Tier zero is basically when creation manifested. So, creation of the universe, or if we can divide universe into two words, UNI verse. Universe, verse means a song. So it may not have been really a big bang, it could have been just a heavenly melody that started the universe. So there is even the language cannot really express it, there was a primary supreme consciousness. A primary supreme consciousness with no gender that released awareness. However, we want to justify the released awareness with saying like there was a big bang, or saying that there was just a song, and that awareness gave birth to a female supreme consciousness. When I say female, is not in a sense similar to, you know, man and woman. Female is the idea of giving birth. It's like the primary supreme consciousness created this female supreme consciousness, and the female supreme consciousness gave birth to at least three other supreme consciousnesses, and each earth is technically in communication with one supreme consciousness. I hope I'm not losing you here. And the information at this point is not really extraordinarily important. It just shows you where we are moving. So technically, each stage has its God, and you know, once we pass, we cross over, and you know, we yearn for God. And Rumi did yearn for God all the time. We go back to the God of that tier. And not to the original supreme consciousness. So at some point, all of these expansions are going to implode. The expansion is going to implode. Everything is going to implode into a phenomena similar to black hole, which there seem to be nothing, but it's very intense. Or maybe something different, but I don't have any other metaphor to use. So technically there is no return to the primary state of consciousness, or to the supreme consciousness that created these different layers and levels of us dealing with the phenomena we call God. As much as it made sense, you know, what we can take out of what I said is that there are three Earths. And we sometimes time travel. Some of my students have done that, and like especially in the year two, when we go into outer body experiences, we have a lot of practices and all that to actually leave the body, the physical body, and time travel, bringing information and so forth. A couple of my students have done that, and it seems like it's true for them as well. Anyway, so the creator of all things basically gives birth to nothing or nothing. Nothingness is not a void, is not a whole, is nothing. Nothingness is the stuff from which the universe is made of. It's the fiber of all creation, is the field of all possibilities, potentialities, consciousness, awareness. So technically the phenomenon of the Big Bang happened out of nothing. There was nothing, and then there was a Big Bang. The Big Bang or life, the start of the life, gave birth to the phenomena we call in Shafa truth. Truth is really the intelligence that runs you. And in the probably half an hour ago, I talked about the first agreement. So after all these intelligences have been given birth to, they knew everything they were supposed to know, and then they came up with the idea of the first agreement, and then we all descended from knowing into being, and then there was a space, then there was time. So a space, time, that allowed the matter to manifest. And so technically, there is a these are one of some of our my axioms or Shafa axioms. For those of you that are not clear, again, as far as what Shafa is or what it means, Shafa means miraculous healing in my native language, Farsi, Iranian, and is not an ancient healing method. I put it together based on my clairvoyant abilities. Grandmaster healer Parandin, my mentor, had nothing to do with this. As far as verbatim and verbiage, and you know, basically these ideas that I'm sharing with you, I don't know if he shared any of these beliefs. What he's done for me is that his presence prepared an environment of healing for me to tap into what I'm depicting, what I'm teaching, what I'm doing. So axiom zero, there is a matrix of life, everything is interconnected and there is no separation. That's axiom zero. You know, another way of saying there is God. Nothingness is the fiber of all creation, the mother of all creation. It's not a void, it's not a whole. Nothingness is where there is no right, there is no wrong. Truth, when we say truth in Shafa, we mean the intelligence or the spirit, you know, just to make sense of it, that runs you. It's about, it is about sincerity and integrity to all expression. It is about approaching the world with pure intention. And you may find traces of it in your heart, in actually your physical heart. It is beyond thoughts and ideas, beyond pain or pleasure, beyond right and wrong. Another axiom is truth operates, truth or the intelligence that runs you operates in the plane of reality I call knowingness. Another axiom, I am, is knowing who you are. So whenever you say I am, you know who you are. It's a strength. With the strength comes power. You know, as we work together, you start to notice and strengthen your abilities, and with that comes power, and with power comes responsibility. Truth is timeless, so technically the intelligence that runs you is timeless, free of wavelengths. There is no wavelength, is non-local. So the intelligence that runs you is non-local. Yes, it operates the physical body, but is non-local. It is not in the physical body. My place is the placeless. A trace of the traceless. That's what Rumi says. And therefore, weightless, colorless, shapeless. As soon as it is located, is no longer truth. That is probably why the intelligence resists from being located.
So the intelligence is non-local. The intelligence that runs you, you may have different names for it for in your cultures, is non-local, non-local. Truth gives off persistence. There is no time. So technically with the intelligence that runs you, time does not apply. It's timeless. It's actionless action. Action localizes truth. So anytime you, the intelligence, do something, you're localizing yourself. So that's when the manifestation and materialization starts. Another axiom, any deviation from truth, and by truth I mean the intelligence that runs you, any deviation from truth, we have matter or barriers. Any deviation from truth, and you may be dealing with matter only, and healing may not be possible. So technically then you have only the body of the your patient, your Hili, to work with. Speaking of Hili, in Shafa, we don't say patients, we don't say clients, we say healees. So technically you become the healer, and whomever you do healing or work with for healing becomes a healee. The intelligence or the truth postulates all the time. So the intelligence and the truth postulates all the time. For those of you who may not know what I mean when I say postulate is taking things for granted, knowing matter-of-factly it is so. So it's like we postulate, let's say, a formula in mathematics, and then we put the numbers to prove it is so. So the intelligence constantly postulates, and in doing so, in postulating, it creates space. Truth always is, or the intelligence is always is. The truth, when you are truthful, these are some of the attributes. When the intelligence that runs you is present in the here and now, these are some of the attributes. Kindness, compassion, selflessness. They all become apparent. It feels like that's who you are. The truth is really a spiritual being. So in Shafa, every student of the Shafa, first thing in the morning, as soon as they wake up, they say, they repeat this sentence, I am a spiritual being, and I'm going to have wonderful human experiences for today. So every day, first thing in the morning, we remind ourselves that we are spiritual beings, having, operating human bodies, and it's not the other way around. We mentioned about the axiom of the first agreement. The first agreement was to descend and technically start to manifest and create and co-create. The idea was to create, manifest, materialize, and have fun. And that got distorted in our time track. Each agreement that we make weighs something. That's the axiom number 30. Each agreement that you make weighs something. So for those of you who believe in reincarnation, lifetime after lifetime, we came down with different agreements, and therefore we became heavier and heavier and heavier. In this lifetime, if there is only one lifetime, again, can you imagine how many agreements you've made so far? And that also makes you heavier and heavier, and it makes it difficult to reach the plane of reality we call beingness. Because unless you are not in the beingness, in the plane of reality we call beingness, you cannot really know. And that's what happens to most people. They keep on going to people, going to other healers, going to gurus, reading books, trying to find out the answer to their questions, because they can't tap into that place of knowingness. I mentioned that soul is a spirit with anchors in the physical body, or spirit plus experiences. Truth or the intelligence is aware. So awareness is the recognition of the unbroken wholeness of all things. Released awareness is birth, so anytime an awareness is released, there is a birth, and that's feminine. Imagery creates the blueprint, that axiom 34, imagery creates the blueprint for what you postulate. So what you postulate definitely is going to materialize. In Shafa, we postulate that we know that there are past lives. So one does not just come once to this world, though there are exceptions. So exceptions apply. There are some of us that this lifetime is the first lifetime. When you decide to study with us, and once you are invited, then you must have partners. So one of our conditions for you to join us is that you must have partners, which basically means on a daily basis you talk to your partners for at least 7 minutes, or you contact them however you can, in person or via email in case you're living in different parts of the world, and you must work on one another. So every day we must practice. The gatherings are usually every month or every 2 weeks. Assignments are given, and then you go at it, and you practice with your partners. In doing the assignments with your partners, you'll find out that everyone is your equal. Everyone is your equal. You find out that the real strength is in honesty. And if you recall, by honesty I mean just seeing the condition as it is, not as you want to see it. You'll find out that the benefits of showing the real you is so rewarding. You observe sharing guilt, rejection, hiding yourself, and the rewards of self-acknowledgement. You will experience firsthand that you are growing through your spiritual bounding with your partners. You'll find out that you remain whole within the laws of the physical universe. So physical universe is not an illusion, is an agreed upon reality, is the reason why we are learning, is the reason why we are gathering the experiences that we are gathering. So some schools of mind, as I was going through my processes, technically, literally say this is an illusion, your physical body is an illusion, everything else is an illusion, and it's not. The physical body is important. The physical universe is important. That's why you and I are connecting. You know, that's why we live. So there is an inherent value in the physical body, and through the physical body, the restrictions, the shortcomings of the physical body, the intelligence that runs you creates, co-creates, and that's the joy of creation that surfaces. So physical body is important. We must attend to the physical universe. We must attend to the physical body, but lovingly. So far you may have been attending to your physical body maybe because you feared you may get sick, or you were sick, or something. But I want us, from the moment we actually, maybe today, whether we study together or not, I want you to actually start loving the physical body. It has nothing to do with being egotistical or narcissist. It's your vehicle for this lifetime. It's the only temple you have leased for a lifetime. So you get to learn that. You get to receive healing. You get to do healing each and every time that you work with different partners. You start to actually trusting your body as a guide. It's an expanding sense of self, really. So once you're full of light, you can trust your physical body. It gives information. In the beginning of our session today, I talked about your only physical highway to heavens that can be seen, your cord of connection. Well, the information comes through the cord and appears inside the abdomen, the area between the navel and the pubic bone. So, how would you get the information to process? It comes through the cord of connection, which is a physical phenomenon. It comes into your physical body, which is a physical phenomenon. Once your vibrations are raised, then you are going to have ahas, or cognitions. Cognitions are sudden realizations. Any questions so far? You know, I'm mentioning the joy of spiritual bonding with your partners that is going to resonate, is going to ripple in all areas of your life. You learn to really value the relationship, to enhance your relationship. You actually start to walk the road of self-acceptance, regardless of what hypnotic commands you've been affected by. You start to actually start trusting what you get is not an act of ego. It has nothing to do with it. It's just, you know, sometimes you start to eat a food that you really like and your body guides you to stop. And you should respect that. But vibrations have to rise to a certain level for you to gain that level of certainty. There is a question, Andrea. Dear Master Donatus, I've been a massage therapist for years and feel drawn to you and this work, but I also feel a bit unworthy. Is this work for only a few? Andrea, but, you know, I just was saying that, you know, once you start, no, it's not for a few. That's the short answer. Everyone can be a healer. Is, you know, do you decide to, you know, position yourself? You know, the title of today's session is positioning. Would you position yourself as a healer? You know, did I position myself as a healer? Once I positioned myself as a healer, then the entity came to me. Once I positioned myself to be a healer, I wore the hat of a healer, I assumed the platform of one, and wanted to go to a radio show, then the entity came. Already gave myself the platform. I already positioned myself to be a healer. I never advertised. I still don't have a business card. You know, once I ask my, you know, I'm answering Andrea, I'm sure a lot of you have similar questions, that people ask me that, you know, where's your business card? And, you know, friends really insist that I should have a business card. And my mentor looked at me and said, why? And I said, thank you. So, no business card, nothing. I just positioned myself to be a healer. You know, prior to me sitting home at my small two-bedroom apartment in Corte Madera, I had a travel agency. One day, I just shut the travel agency down. You know, while I was working as a travel agent and had my own travel agency, people would come to me and I would do healing with them in the storage room full of brochures and videos and stuff for trips and all that. And to me, it was ridiculous. You know, that's not what I was doing. I was doing it for the money only. I was doing the travel agency. So I shut the door and I came down. And Andrea, I'm with you, so stay with me. I came home and I sat home and I announced that I'm a healer. See, I announced I'm a healer. How did I announce? Did I go to a radio show? Did I send flyers here and there? Did I call friends and acquaintances and announce that I'm a flyer? That I'm a healer? No flyer, nothing. I just announced it to the universe with clarity of intention. When I announced, I was free from all emotions. Make a mental note of it, please, Andrea. I was free from all emotions. I was free from all wishes and desires. I was free from all concerns. And most importantly, this may be interesting for everyone, I was free from hope.
I was free from hope. I repeat, I was free from hope. Is hope a bad thing, you may ask? Well, no, actually hope is a good thing. Is what makes us human beings and so forth. But it also shows you don't know. When you're hoping, you don't know. You're hoping. So when I announced I was free from all of the above, and I announced, and the universe heard me. Everything started to come together. Everything. Within a month or two, I live in a county that is either the wealthiest or one of the wealthiest counties in America. And it's full of healers. And people were telling me, don't go there. There are so much competition. There is, you know, people are very conservative. They don't like foreigners and so forth. And I said, well, you know, I have no competition. I'm not going to compete with anyone. I'm just going to bring in healing, light, and love to people. You know, as far as people, they're going to melt when they see me. So maybe they are, and that's their process. It's not my process. So, you know, in 1995, 17 years ago, I came to this county. And, you know, ever since I started, maybe within a month, people were coming to me. And I'm addressing specifically Andrea, who's a massage therapist. And I would ask them, okay, what do you want? And they wouldn't tell me what they want. And, you know, finally I said, okay, what do you do? And I learned to ask that question, what do you do? And they said, modalities. I said, what do you mean, modalities? Well, you know, I'm a healer. So soon enough, the words got out, and other healers in this county wanted to know what it is that I'm doing, because their doctors were talking about this, because their clients were talking about it, and I had no idea that in such a short time the word has gotten out. You know, we do have a website. We are actually working on a blog site, so it's more interactive. It's called ehealing.org, and it's going to be up and running, not perfectly, I'm sure, but it will. In that we can communicate, but you know, these are recent phenomena. Prior to that, you know, yes, I do have a website that was put together some years ago, but I did not advertise. I did not join in any you know, Google or any other organization to spread the word. I just position myself, Andrea. I just position myself and announce that I'm a healer to the universe. And everything else comes together. Again, remember, once you do that, and you may be able to do it during one of your meditations, when you're free from all emotions, free from all wishes and desires, free from all concerns, because concerns are agents of fear, free from hope, which basically means I'm hoping that I start the healing practice, but I'm hoping that I'm going to be very successful. Well, it's a toss-up. It's a toss-up. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? I want you to reach the plane of reality during your meditation that you're certain. So with certainty, you announce that. You take responsibility. You assume the platform of a healer. You wear the hat of one. And then things come together. You see, as soon as any one of us has clear intentions, again, arrows of creation from all directions, carrying the germs of subtle creation of form, they come together and start to shape a form. And the more you look at the form, the sooner the manifestation, the materialization. So yes, of course, you can be a healer. You already have somewhat positioned yourself to be a healer by being a massage therapist. Maybe at the time you started to be a massage therapist, it was heavily finance-based or not. But obviously, you have had an eye on this process. So of course you can. And of course, you know, the healing is not limited to a few chosen ones. You know, exceptions aside, everyone can heal, but do you choose to? So that was a long-winded answer to your question. So Linda from Mount Shasta. How do we connect with a partner to do the daily practice with? Would that be another student through the class? Can we do that long distance? Yes, yes. In fact, you know, we encourage long distance. Because in that, right away from the get-go, you learn that there are more than just your physical body and your brain. Right there. We have no choice to believe but to believe. Right there. We encourage distant healings. We actually enhance your energies so you can start to basically witness some changes in the work you do with your partner. Your partners are your fellow students, the other Shafa students. In the year one, you are not allowed to work on your family members and loved ones. You ask your partners to work on your family members. And, you know, I can explain that later, but that's a different question. But yes, the partners are the students, and yes, it's actually encouraged to work long distance. The ones that can connect via phone is strongly be persuaded to do so. There are values initially with the phone calls. I'm Leah. Am I pronouncing the name correctly? I don't know. I am already positioning myself as a healer. How do I know if we are to work together? Well, there is no technically right answer to that question unless you try. Again, you position yourself to work with me, then you start to know. Again, arrows of creation from all directions come and bring you the information. And then you'll know if you're supposed to work with me, then you know, once you announce that, then I'm going to see if I am supposed to work with you. So the timing may not be at this very moment, this month, next month, but we'll see. So the knowingness will come.
Tell them about pushing star 2 if they want to indicate they have a question.
Okay, and
I wasn't working before.
I see. So for those of you that have a question, you must press star 2, whether on your phone or if you're using the
on your phone. Yeah.
On the phone, mm-hmm. Right? Okay.
That's if you want to verbalize.
Okay, if you want to verbalize any question, you press star 2 and we'll let you ask your questions. Okay, so basically axioms are the principles of Shafa. Without axiom, Shafa can be like any other powerful healing modality. And, you know, I mentioned a few axioms. One of the axioms is, you know, I said it earlier, postulate creates space. So technically when I postulate that I want to be a healer, then I'm creating a space for it, which is another word for positioning. So as soon as you postulate, here we have a space, then energy flows. Energy must flow in the space or the space collapses. Once the energy starts to go through the space, then we have time. So, space, energy, time, and we have the raw material for manifestation and materialization. Axiom 70, so I chose a few axioms, not all of them, but a few. The mind is the sum total of all the experiences that you wear at this very moment in time. I repeat, the mind is the sum total of all the experiences that you wear, you know, just like you wear your clothing at this very moment. At this very moment. Okay, we are towards the end of the to our talk for me, but you know, some people may have a question, you know, can I be a healer like Andrea had? Well, it is a physical universe. Everything about it is physical. Your mind is also physical, and it dies with you. Your mind dies with you when you die. Physical universe is an agreed upon reality and not an illusion.
let's say that there are sounds that you do not hear. There are sounds that you do not hear. Like, for example, a dog can hear and smell a lot better than you. A dog can smell 40,000 times more than you can. So the sense of a smell in a dog is 40 times greater. So if the dog can do that, does it mean that usually dogs are more spiritual than we are? They're tapping into the kind of smell that we cannot smell. You know, dogs are not they see aura, but they do not see colors in the aura. But we can. Does it mean we are more spiritual than the dogs? So, you know, what is important is that once the dog smells, you can tap into the knowingness that the dog has. And a few other axioms here before we end our sessions, if there are no questions. One is that there is one question. Okay.
This person from Cleveland, Ohio. He's going to be on audio right now.
Okay. So the person from Cleveland, Ohio. Angela. So if I understood you correctly, you're saying if there is a time for healing and if some people are meant probably not to heal? Is that what you're saying? Are you sick, Angela? Right. Well, you know, in Shafa, we, for the lack of better words, we never give up. You know, if a healing is not happening as fast as we want to, it means that we have to work more and harder and be more focused. You know, the intelligence that has created the whole universe and the planets and the stars and us has not created the universe for pain and destruction. So timing may be off here and there. Somehow we are gifted with the fact that we can create our destiny, and healing is no exceptions. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but healing can be all the time, and miracles are when you do not expect the healing. Did I answer your question, Angela, or not? Thank you. Okay, so regardless of what healing modalities you're being exposed to or not, I know earlier somebody asked about chakras and all that. It's important for you when you're concerned with any kind of healing, self-healing or others, note that the universe turns clockwise. Even your DNA turns clockwise. Your chakras are turning clockwise, but from the point of view of a seer. So if you were to look at my chakra, my heart chakra, you would see my heart chakra is turning clockwise, which is from the right side of my chest up and down to the left. But if I were to see my own chakra, and if I were to think clockwise, is rotating counterclockwise. So it's an interesting subject. You know, I've seen a lot of healers that they balance chakras and they have no idea they were turning, they turn their hands counterclockwise to balance the chakra, which is really a catastrophe. I would like to mention this so those of you who are body workers or healers, really, if nothing, just pay attention to this. If you're turning your hand, make sure your hands are turning clockwise, your clockwise, and that the universe is turning clockwise, DNA is turning clockwise, and anything counterclockwise brings about a lot of unexpected challenges. to the process. Okay? Alright. One final experience I wanted to share with you is, and I know I'm out of time here, that that we can use our senses interchangeably. We can use our senses interchangeably, meaning we can turn sounds into light and colors, and we can turn sounds, music into taste or what have you. And the first time that I actually did that myself, it was on my birthday in 1989. I was in my sorry bed at the university hospital in San Francisco, UCSF, dealing with chemo and other potent drugs sailing into my veins, creating waves of disharmony. The sounds of the machines, a lot of them that were hooked up to me, controlling the flows, the number of drops per minute, were deafening to me. Every drop into my vein seemed to be getting heavier and louder and louder. It was like the Chinese torture. I was so very miserable. You know, I couldn't eat, I couldn't drink, I couldn't breathe right. As a result of the chemo, you know, my internal organs were burnt. On the outside, I had burn signs on my skin, on my face, throughout my body. All the GI tract was badly burned because of the chemo. I was so miserable, and I just couldn't handle the sounds anymore. So somehow, miraculously, I found the strength to affirmatively and silently scream. It was silent, but it was kind of inhumanely loud, crying, demanding help, and it was granted instantaneously. Torturous sounds turned into the most magnificent healing fireworks I have ever seen. They were like waterfalls or light falls of light, depicting the most splendid of all rejuvenating sceneries ever seen. It was like God's healing artwork in motion. So then I learned that I can turn sounds into colors and light. And you can too without going through the torturous processes of getting sick. On that note, I'm going to end our session today. I hope you could have gotten something out of these talks. If you have any questions, please do email or leave us a message, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. If we don't get back to you right away, it doesn't mean that we are not interested in your questions. It's just we are very busy, but we will get back to you. So you have a wonderful evenings wherever you are, wonderful days wherever you are, at any and all the time zones that you're in. And love and life be with you. Take care, please. Blessings.
Very nice.